Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, my guest today is Bob Berg, and many of you will know Bob as the author of the Go Giver book and the series of books around that name and title. And in our conversation today, it's a really fun and interesting conversation because what Bob shares is really the human nature that underpins the Go Giver mentality, the Go Giver movement. And he really articulates five key laws about becoming and staying a go-giver and the impact that'll have not just on your life, but on the lives of those you care about, on the lives of those that you serve. And really what Bob talks about is balancing innate self-interest, which we all have because it's part of the human condition, but how to fulfill that self-interest, to how to fulfill our own goals and needs by better serving others. And it's a really interesting conversation because it taps into that deep human need for each of us to be of service. So lots of really good, interesting things that we talk about, lots of pearls of wisdom, lots of thought-provoking ideas for you to take away and to reflect upon and then apply in your practice. Now, if you want to find out more about Bob, head across to berg.com, B-U-R-G.com, and you can find out about his lectures, you can find out about his speaking, but of course, you can go to thegogiver.com where there's a lot of information about the Go Giver book itself, and I'd encourage you to visit both sites because there's a treasure trove of goodies. Now, for those of you who have not yet downloaded our High Performance Dental Practice Report, all you need to do to grab a hold of that is to go to savvydentist.com/high-performance-report. Grab yourself a copy of that report. It's totally free. And what it's going to also do is give you a strategy and a plan and a framework to implement into your practice. And when you couple that with Bob's thinking around go-giving, you're going to find that you put your practice onto, you know, turbocharge. You really supercharge the growth of your practice using, you know, Bob's go-giving framework as well as our high-performance practice framework. Tons in there for you. And I hope you find that really helpful. So that report, once again, is at savvydentist.com/high-performance-report. I hope you enjoy this interview with Bob as much as I enjoyed having it. Here he is. Bob Berg, author of The Go-Giver. Thank you so much for taking time to come and join us all the way from Florida. How are you today?
I'm great, Dr. Jesse. So fantastic to be with you.
I really appreciate you taking the time. And our audience are probably very well aware of who you are and your work. The Go-Giver book and the series of books around that have been a smash hit worldwide. They're very well known, very well loved, of course. And I wanted to start our conversation assuming that some people listening to this, though, may not yet have heard about those books. And, of course, the story of The Go-Giver is about a young man called Joe who's an ambitious go-getter. And he understands that as he goes through that process, he moves further and further away from his goals until he has the realization that giving is really going to set him on a path to helping others and achieving more for himself. What was the impetus for you to think about go giving rather than go getting? What was the pivot point in your mind that you thought there's got to be a better way to this?
Well, I mean, I have been very fortunate since I began in sales many, many years ago to see what seemed to work best, both short term and sustainably so. And it was always those people who put their focus on others who were the most successful. We would say, you know, the opposite of a go-giver is not really a go-getter because, you know, we look at go-getters as people who take action, which we believe in, right? So we would say, be a go-getter, a person of action, and a go-giver, someone who is absolutely laser-focused on providing immense value to others. So we would say the opposite of a go-giver is actually a go-taker. And that's that person who feels almost entitled, if you will, to take, take, take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation. The reason why being a go-giver is so effective is not for any magical or mystical reasons. It actually taps very much into human nature. You know, when I speak at sales conferences, I'll often begin by saying, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. right? They're not going to buy from you because you need the money or even because you're a really nice person. They're going to buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. Well, it's the same with a dental practice. No one's going to be your patient because you have a certain set goal of how many new patients you want to bring in, you know, or because you have a certain overhead and need to. No, they're going to be your patient because they believe they're going to be better off by being your patient than by not being your patient. Now, this is great, though. It's wonderful news for the entrepreneur or the dentist who really can take their focus off of themselves and place it on that other person. Because this, you know, doing so is what allows this other person to like you, to trust you, to know that you have their best interests at heart.
So, Bob, there's a lot of threads there that I would like to pull on. It's a bit like a jumper with lots of loose threads, and I'm spoiled for choice. So as someone who interviews lots of people, thank you for giving me lots of entry points into that conversation, because you spoke about that it taps into human nature. You spoke about that it's almost intrinsic to who we are to want to give, to add value. And I wondered if there is a way of identifying or naming or quantifying even that part of our human nature, what is going on psychologically that makes us respond positively and favorably to go-givers?
Well, I think there are a couple of different aspects in terms of human nature. One is that as human beings, we do tend to want to bring value to the world around us. Mm. Most people who get into dentistry, and I would say who get into pretty much anything, okay, it's because they have a belief that they're doing something for the world, that they can add value to the world, okay? And we're built like that. I believe it's how we're programmed by nature. Probably it all goes back to those millions of years ago, our cave person ancestors, right? Yeah. Who it was a matter of survival, passing along your genes to the next generation, right? So there was a reason for being. And so I think we're like that anyway. Now, there's another aspect of human nature, though, which is very eye-focused, very self-interested, also goes back to those millions and years ago to the day when every day was a matter of survival and you had to be self-interested. You had to know, right?
Yeah.
So it's both. You know, and this is one reason why I say to people, you know, don't deny your self-interest. You are, if you're a dentist, you have a self-interest in building a profitable practice. You want to support your family. You want to give to those places you want to give to. You want to do the things that you want to live a complete life. And money is a part of doing that. But then we have to understand that the other person doesn't care about that. So we don't need to forego our self-interest or deny it, but we do need to put it aside. We need to temporarily suspend it.
There's a prime minister from Australia several prime ministers ago. His name was Paul Keating, and he had this expression, Bob, and he said, if there's a horse called self-interest running, I'll back it every time. And he was very well known for his quotes. He's quite acerbic, and he's probably from a bygone era in many senses. But what I wanted to ask you, because again, you've given me another entry point, and where self-interest and go-giving kind of come up against one another. And if I've understood you correctly, what I'm hearing is it's okay to have your self-interest. It's how you go about fulfilling that self-interest.
Yeah, that's perfect. A great friend of mine, his name is Dan Rockwell. He does a blog on leadership. And he says, self-interest is normal.
Yeah.
Other interest is leadership.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So it's normal to be self-interested. And there's nothing wrong with that. Again, it's part of human nature. Let's not deny what is. But when you can take that and put it aside, because you know that for you to thrive, you're going to have to put it aside.
Yeah.
Because again, no one's doing business with you for your sake. They're doing it for their sake, and that's okay. Okay. So when you can put it aside and you can focus on that other person bringing immense value to others, that's leadership. Okay. And that leads to success. You know, John David Mann, my excellent co-author of The Go-Giver and the other books in the series, one of the things we say is money is simply an echo of value.
Mm-hmm.
Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder, if you will, to value's lightning, which means what? That the focus on the other person, the focus on providing value to the other person must come first. Value comes first. The money you receive is simply a natural result of the value you've provided.
You know, we are living in almost the age of individualism, if you will. We've seen communities or traditional communities perhaps be important for some people, less important for others, of course. I'm a personal believer that community is a wonderful thing. I think we're social animals, and that's really why I do what I do. Our whole coaching program is predicated on community. With respect to go giving and being that person who continues to add value, even recognizing the self-interest there, how do you keep that in check? How do you make sure you're walking that line and maintaining an even keel, if you will,
sure,
in that space? Because it's easy for the human interest to take over. It's easy for us to lose sight of that, in a sense. What sort of daily practices or what sort of routines might someone have to ensure they're staying on the path of go-giving?
I love the question, and let's really delve into that. I want to, if I may, can I respond to your point regarding individualism and community?
Please.
First,
I would love you to, because I love your thoughts on that.
Thank you. I don't believe there is any natural dichotomy between individualism and community. Okay. As individuals, we have a need to be part of a community.
Yeah.
We join communities.
Mm-hmm.
When we are voluntarily part of a community, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Now, when force is involved, that's not a beautiful thing.
No.
That's not really community. That's communism, right? That's different. But nobody does it alone, but nobody's supposed to do it alone.
Exactly.
You know, when one's an individual, you know, we believe in individual rights to pursue happiness as we choose to, as opposed to how other people choose it for us. But we tend to associate enjoyed communities and groups that have the basic philosophy that we have, while, of course, respecting everyone else's right to pursue happiness as they choose to, providing nobody infringes upon the rights of anyone else to do the same.
Indeed.
So the question, you know, how do we check ourselves in terms of that self-interest? Well, it goes a couple of ways, okay? One is for the person who thinks, well, you know, I really am self-interested. And what I'm going to say again is, that's okay. Congratulations for accepting the truth of something. For being human, yeah. Right? And not trying to deny it and trying to signal virtuosity when you don't feel that way. It's wonderful, okay? But now let's look at the practicality of being other-focused. And again, I would go back to that question, you know, are people who work in your dental practice, are they going to want to work for you and dedicate themselves to your practice and to your patients if you're just thinking of yourself and not thinking of their interests? Probably not. Oh, sure, you pay them, but they can get a job at another practice. Okay. So when we can focus on how to make those who work with us, all of our team members, when we can help them to thrive and help them feel valued and help them to feel good about themselves, okay? So our focus being on them, we're going to have a more successful practice. What about when our patients come into the office? Okay, are we going to probably have a more successful practice when we ignore them and just work on what we want to work on rather than what they need? No, probably not. We're going to have a much more successful practice when we ask questions and we discover what it is they need, what they want, what they desire, what's going on with them, how we can best serve them. So even if we want to look at it for just utilitarian reasons, it's so much more profitable to actually take our focus off ourselves and our interest and focus on our patient's interest. Now, the good news is when you start doing that, not only does your practice thrive even more, but you feel better about it. Because again, as human beings, we do want to be of value to others.
Yeah. I really appreciate you saying that, because I know that, you know, during times of, you know, let's call COVID as it is, pandemic, I know there's been a lot of fear and uncertainty. And I know for some people, they've found it hard to maintain that go-giver mentality because they're dealing with their own emotional response to things. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because I think the way out of that is to continue to focus on giving.
Exactly.
And the way through that is just to maintain that. And I really, really appreciate you saying that. Your go-giver book is predicated on five laws. As of course, there's, you know, you've touched on one exclusively or extensively already, which was around delivering value. But there's another four, and you've mentioned, you know, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if we could touch on those four laws that complement the law of giving value, so that people can get a holistic view of how they interact and how they hang together.
Sure. Well, the law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people or patients you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one, the law of value, is all about your potential income, law number two is all about your actual income, because it's how many lives you impact with that exceptional value. So we could say that exceptional value, law one, plus enormous reach, law two, equals very high compensation.
And what about law number three?
Yeah, this is the law of influence. And the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, this does not mean you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial. It simply means this, as Joe, the protege in the story, learned from several of the mentors. The golden rule of business, the golden rule of sales, the golden rule of a dental practice is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you and others than by genuinely moving from that I focus or me focus to an other focus. Or as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, making your win all about the other person's win.
You used a really deliberate word, which was genuinely. And I like the way you emphasize that, because it's the intention behind what you're doing. Genuinely speaks to intention rather than seeing this as a tactic for getting more. It's a way of being rather than a way of trying to.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. Absolutely.
And so I really like that. And I think that speaks to authenticity as well, which is law number four.
Law four, which says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself.
Yeah.
And in this part of the story, Deborah, one of the mentors, she had shared a lesson that all the skills in the world, whether it's the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, what have you, as important as those are, and they are all indeed very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. Now, when you do, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel comfortable with you. They feel safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they are getting. Now, you know, I really believe that, and I don't know about in the beautiful land down under, but here in the States, sometimes there's a little bit of a confusion in terms of what authenticity really means. It's almost like, you know, does authenticity just mean you just say whatever you want to say? There's no boundaries, but take it or leave it.
We have that too.
Okay. So it's not just us. And, you know, this would be like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot. If I were to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. No way. No way. That has nothing to do with it. What that means is that that person has an authentic problem.
Yeah.
That they need to authentically work on in order to become a better, higher, more effective, authentic version of themselves. So we never want to use the word authenticity to keep us from growing, but rather use it as an impetus to expand upon ourselves and to keep growing and to keep becoming a better version of ourselves. And, you know, when you think about it, authenticity can be very easily defined as acting congruently with your values.
I think you're absolutely right. We see a lot of people adopt that approach. You know, this is who I am, take it or leave it, love me or not. And, you know, what I really like that you've described there is a nice reframe, which is you've got an authentic problem that you need to authentically solve to become authentically a better self and live congruently. Because I think even that person who does have their anger issues, surely one of their core values is not, I'm an angry person.
Right.
You know, that's the issue. And that's the difference that you've really highlighted there. So what about receptivity? I'm curious to understand, the ability to receive and how that feeds into being a go-giver.
Sure. So that's the final law. So we've got the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity. Now we have the law of receptivity. And this one says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Hmm. And this one really means nothing more than understanding that, yeah, you breathe out, but you also have to breathe in. Hmm. It's not one or the other. It's both. We breathe in carbon, carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving, despite the messages that we receive from the world around us, giving and receiving are not opposite concepts. Mm. The message we get, and again, I don't know that this is Australia, though I suspect it probably is worldwide, it certainly is in the States, that, you know, abundance and prosperity and money and business are vilified. Hmm. And you think people who make a lot of money did it on the backs of others, or they did it through some nefarious means. Now, there's lots of people in the world, so some people do that. But no, in any kind of business where no one's forced to do business with you, the only way you can earn a lot of money is by providing immense value to a lot of people.
Yep.
Right. And so, because remember, no one has to do business with you. No one has to be your patient. So giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem.
I spoke to a couple of friends of mine about your book, all of whom loved the book, of course.
Thank you.
We were talking about five laws, and receptivity, it was probably the one law that people said, that's the one I struggle most with. It's the one I find most hardest. Is that just the cohort of people I'm hanging around with, or is that something that other people have expressed to you?
Very much so. And again, it's because of the messages we get from the world around us. Think about it, from upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television, movies, social media, everywhere. What are the messages that we get? Mm. They're horrible, horrible messages. One of my great friends, a real prosperity icon, his name is Randy Gage. And this guy has mastered, you know, prosperity thing. Really brought himself from a guy who was not prosperous growing up to a person who really learned and applied. And he now is, wow. But he does this wonderful vignette about movies, right?
Yeah.
If you watch any popular movie, you'll notice there are always, and this is Randy saying this, that there are always two basic characters that are portrayed. There are the good people who are usually portrayed as poor,
yeah,
but they're honest and they're hardworking and they're usually pretty happy. They're poor, but happy. And then the other type of character is who? The rich person who is evil and terrible and usually a corporate executive and just money hungry, right? And he talks about he gives a great example. He gives many great examples, but one, a very quick one, is the first Spider-Man movie years ago. And Peter Parker is sitting on the couch with his Uncle Ben. And, you know, he's asking Uncle Ben about their being poor. And Uncle Ben says, well, Peter, we may be poor, but at least we're honest. What a terrible, terrible message for a kid, child watching this to see. Because what's the presupposition? What's the premise? That if you are honest, you're probably poor.
Yeah.
Or if you're wealthy, you're not honest. Now, we're going to say, well, that's just a movie. No, it's pretty much every movie.
Yeah.
But it's also much of the teaching that we get, whether it's from schools, whether it's from a lot of times parents, whether it's from our community, whether it's from whatever it happens to be. So this is basically running our, and this is the most insidious part of all, it's in our unconscious. It's not that consciously people say, oh, I don't want to make money. But what happens is, okay, if they really have these deep-seated beliefs that money is bad, then what they're going to do is they're going to push it away unconsciously every single time, right? So you start really providing great value to a lot of people, and things are starting to really happen, and they're starting to come. But are people going to think, now you're not consciously thinking of this, but unconsciously, are people going to think I did something wrong? Are people going to resent me? Are they going to not like me? Are they going to think I'm this or that? Right? And we sabotage the process. So that's why I'm a big believer that prosperity is something that needs to be studied proactively, because all the garbage comes in naturally. You don't need to, right?
Yeah.
And so that's important. So, you know, people like Randy Gage, people like Sharon Lecter, people like Ellen Rogan, and people like Ken Honda of Japan, and people like Bob Proctor in Canada. You know, there's so many people all around the world that do wonderful teachings on prosperity and prosperity mindset. You know, I listen to their blog or read their blogs and watch their videos and listen to, you know, because it's all of us. We need to keep that prosperity, that good, clean thinking coming in.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. We've always got to make sure that, you know, we're weeding the garden of our mind. We're making sure we're eliminating or reducing those, you know, negative inputs as much as possible and fertilizing the garden with the prosperity thinking that you spoke about. Bob, obviously people will be interested to get your book and they can get it on any, you know, reputable bookstore. But of course, I'd recommend people go across to thegogiver.com and check out the resources and the blog and the podcast that are all there. Wanted to ask you a question for people who might not be as familiar with your work. What would be something that you wished you'd learned earlier in your life that has proven to be really valuable later in life?
Well, hard to say. I think it would have been that I probably would have started much younger in really making a focus on learning and understanding human nature, right? Because I think really when you think about it, human nature is the most important thing we can study, because not only are we always dealing with ourselves, but we're dealing with other humans in terms of business, in terms of personal relationships, in terms of social relationships, in terms of pretty much everything. So, you know, the mind really is a powerful, powerful object, if you will. And there are many aspects to it. And as human beings, you know, we're emotional creatures. We're pretty much emotionally driven. We'd like to think we're rational people, but we more rationalize than act rationally. And, you know, when we rationalize, we tell ourselves rational lies. and we do that a lot. So I think making a study of human nature is that first thing that I would have, you know, said to young Bob Berg really early in my career, to, you know, kind of master that part first, the understanding of human nature, if that can be mastered. And I'm still trying to figure it out. You know,
I think that's life's journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob, you've been an incredibly generous guest today, and I want to say thank you. You know, it's wonderful to finally get to meet you. As I said, I've
likewise
read lots of your material, and it's nice to, you know, meet the person behind the book and to understand a little bit about what drives you, what inspires your thinking, and really where those ideas have been shaped and come from. So from all of us here on our podcast, thank you once again. You know, if people wanted to connect with you, is the best way to go to thegogiver.com, or should they go and find you on social media?
Sure. Actually, I think I'm more listed on social media if they go to Berg, BURG.com. And if they scroll down to the bottom, you can kind of find me everywhere on social media. Thegogiver.com is more the book page.
Yeah, lovely. Well, ladies and gents, I'd really encourage you to familiarize yourself, if you haven't already, with all of Bob's work, because there's a huge amount of stuff there. Lots of great blogs. I was reading some blogs in preparation for this interview, and maybe another time we can come back and talk about some of those, because there's some really fascinating topics in there that we can dig into. But Bob, once again, thank you for your time today. It's been really lovely to get to meet you and to talk to you today. So thank you once again.
Thank you, Dr. Jesse. The same.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.